All right, good morning. Once again, I am Tarek, and I'm an addict, and it is my pleasure now to introduce a man in my life who really doesn't need an introduction, and he's probably going to be sour after I say a few words. You guys hear me reference Dante quite a bit, and you always hear me reference Ralph. These two men have influenced me greatly over the years. And Ralph's been my sponsor for the last 6.5 years. And Ralph has shortened the distance between my mind and my heart. And the most important lesson I believe I've learned up to this point from this man is that the way that happens is through the art of storytelling. Even last Thursday night at our sponsorship family meeting, because I got this idea from Ralph. Ralph started this shortly after the pandemic started with all of us that he sponsors. And that meeting has just been a wonderful thing to be a part of. And we were going through the chapter to the wives, and I still have this thing in me, this personality of wanting to be a teacher, And so we were talking about the way we impact people, through Bill Wilson's eyes as he wrote the chapter to the wives. And, we opened up to sharing, and, I was reflecting over what I said that night. And it was like my teacher comes up about how to use that chapter, and the opportunities I got, which are rare, to sit down with another family. And then as the meeting unfolded, I had a new experience with the remembrance. Because our struggle with drugs and alcohol dismembers us, it rips us apart, it tears down our humanity. And the art of storytelling is what remembers us, brings us back together. I mean, think about the first time you heard someone tell you parts of your story in a meeting, and something inside of us was put back together. We may not even be conscious of it. And I wasn't conscious of it for many years. And that's what Ralph taught me, man. Just shorten the distance between the mind and my heart. I don't want to take up any more time. Ralph, take as much time as you need. I absolutely love you, Ralph. And I want to thank you for coming on this meeting this morning. And with that, I give you Ralph White.
Wow. Thanks, T. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic. And I'd like to thank you guys for allowing me to crash the party. It's so many blessings right off the top. When I get up, it's 6 in the morning, 6:21. So I have to get up at 5:30. That's one of the blessings of Zoom, because, I only have to get up at 5:30 to be at a 6 o'clock. If it were live, if I were getting I'd be bitching for real. So you guys don't need to see the bottom. I got my shirt on it. As I sit here and I see 48 squares filled, I just think about it. Think about it. It's Sunday morning here. And I know it's a couple of guys in South Africa, so it's probably later in the day. There was a guy in the UK, it's probably later in the day. For you guys, it's about 9 o'clock in the morning. But still, guys, and it's a few guys on here, just counting, weeks and months. You guys remember, it wasn't that long ago that you were stumbling in at this hour, if you were coming in yet. You know what I'm saying? And so I get overwhelmed. I get full when I just think about this, the blessings before I even acknowledge the blessings. To sit here with a bunch of guys that are just like me, that are in an upright position, that many of us, not a few of y'all that probably can't do it, but most of us can pull something green out of our pocket right now, too. That's amazing on Sunday morning, because Sunday morning, I'm done. I'm tapped out. Usually, if I made it to Sunday, I'm coming out the motel a couple hours from now. I want to shoot the birds for singing. I would see couples and they'd be happy. I'd be pissed off. I haven't been a couple happy in a long time. People going to church on Sunday morning, dressed nice. I come from that background, but all of that was like a knife in my stomach. So when I get to come on here And Tarek didn't give me a topic. And I was thinking, I wonder, you know, if, you know, if I'm going to talk about a topic. And T referenced the fact that we started going through two wives last week. And so I think the topic, you guys, is Happy Father's Day. Even to those of you who are not yet fathers or who may never be fathers, you know, and I'm going to bring that home. Happy birthday, Brad. 1 year. That's big. That's a big deal. You know, 1 year means you didn't get loaded on your natal birthday. 1 year means you cycle through a Christmas and a Thanksgiving and a New Year's. You know, 1 year means that no matter, it's been some disappointments, it's been some ups and one whole damn year. That's big. Happy birthday, sir. And Stephen, three of those cycles around the sun with all the days that come in there. Happy birthday. And then I saw somebody put in the chat, I don't know why Brandon didn't acknowledge, but happy birthday, Brandon. 12, sir, you're on the verge of teenage. That's big. Happy birthday, gentlemen. And like I say, happy Father's Day. When we were reading that chapter, Two Wives, and many of you guys are already, because I know how Tarek is, so I know many of you guys are already somewhat familiar with the chapter. I've been doing this 36 years, you guys, and that's still not one of the chapters I'm as familiar with as the others, which supposedly have the meat, but it is my contention now that every chapter has some meat in it for me. I didn't realize, sometimes it's context, sometimes it's timing, sometimes it's when you get exposed to something. And I guess because of the group I was with on Thursday, and at this particular time, that if you haven't read the chapter to wives, it ain't no wives on here. So many of you might be thinking, why would I? It's got so much meat in there because it tells, it paints a picture better than any picture I have painted outside of when I did amends to my first wife, of what I look like when I'm, when you in my blast radius. And when I'm getting loaded, fellas, it's two categories of people that's around me. I call them Marks and Vicks. Marks and Vicks. That's it. Two categories of people. They call themselves mom, spouse, kids, employer, boss, brothers, friends. I call them Marks and Vicks. And I came to you guys on October 11th, 1986. I was 33 years old. And I had been a guy who was somewhat successful in a lot of endeavors. I'm a school boy. I'm a square guy. I'm an achiever. I'm a make things happen kind of guy. I have a lot of strong willpower. I am a usually get it done kind of guy. I'm a goal setter. And up until in my mid-20s, maybe, I was accustomed to setting goals and I was accustomed to achieving goals. I don't want to say I'm a nice guy, I'm a good guy, I don't mean that, but I got a big heart. I'm a guy that always wanted better for my family, for myself, for my community. I always was this guy that inclines towards helping. I don't know if everybody's built that way. You know, when you inside yourself, that's all you have is a frame of reference. Your other frame of reference is what it looks like other people do naturally. So I don't know. I don't know if, but when you get sober, it is not surprising to me when I listen to the introductions, it is not surprising to me that so many of you guys sponsor. And when you sponsor, it doesn't feel forced, and it really feels easy when one of the guys you sponsors, when you see him welcome back in the house, or when you see him with his kids, or when you see him with his girl, or when you see his parents proud of him, it does something for you. We don't bring that about on our own. You know, but I think when we are in the chapter, we agnostics, and it talks about deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. You know, I can't go inside every man, woman, and child. So I know Bill takes license when he writes, but it's not surprising to me, fellas, that so many of you guys sponsor. And when you are outside of yourself, looking at one of your guys, what it does for you. You know, that's a whole lot different than when you're putting your hands on somebody that burned you in the life. That's a whole lot different than that feeling you used to think you get when somebody disrespected you and you got to check them and I got to puff up. I used to feel like where I got my sense of worth, but no, it ain't nothing. It ain't nothing that feels like what you guys, I'm telling you, when I got on here, you know, I want to be salty about getting up early in the morning, but I can't help. I can't help. I could not help myself when I get on here and I see you guys in the morning and you're welcoming me. Because at 33 years old, I was done. Like I say, I had a lot of stuff that went on in my life. I was used to achieving things. Had a college sweetheart, you know, came out of school, dreams, goals, hopes, ambitions. But the thing about it, when I went into college, I had big goals and ambitions. When I came out, I was already, if not deep in the life, I was knee deep. So the idea of going to law school when I came out, I took the LSAT, but man, I'm busy. I'm already busy. Now, my brother Ronnie, he went to a smaller school that was better. I should have gone to one. So Ronnie goes to law school and he goes, and we would go up to San Francisco where Ronnie went to school. I'm in LA, and I go in San Francisco at that time had the best blow. And we go up there, copping OZs. And that's how I started, you guys. I have a lot of brothers. We are, we're social guys. And I started in the life with fun and games. You know, in the chapter Vision for You, talks about the early days being camaraderie, you know, and conviviality and a lot of fun. That's me. You know, but in the latter days, so in 79, the wheels pretty much start coming off. I start hitting the horn in 1979. I start smoking, you know, and in 1980, I get married. 1983, I have a little girl. I'm on rims by now, you guys. The wheels been off. 85, I get kicked out of my house. And 85 to 86, I'm at my mom's house. And on the during the week, I'm pretty much doing the aimless walk, you know, because I'm out at night. I'm out at night all the time. I'm smoking and I'm drinking. I came here and thank God for smoking, because I'm a weed smoker from way back. And I said I would be smoking weed till I was a granddad. I thought I'd be a cool granddad with my grandsons. You know, they're going off to school. We smoke weed together because I had a partner. One of my boys' dad, Don, was smoke weed with us. I'm in my 20s. Looking back, Don's dad was probably 41, 42. So he was still young. He seemed old to us then. And he was smoking weed with us. And I was like, man, that's a cool dad. I'm going to be like that. You know, when I'm a granddad, I'm going to, you know, be putting it down with my grandsons. I'm going to be with his partners, and I'm going to be the sage old guy that's dispensing wisdom to them. And they're going to look up to me like I looked up to dude, right? That was 42, 43 years old. So I thought I'd smoke weed forever, you guys. Thank God for smoking the pot, because it took away weed. When I got sober, I didn't have to worry about the weed thing. When I got sober, I really didn't have to worry about that, because some of that had already been taken away. And I'm a cold alcoholic, standalone. If it was standing alone, just smoking weed, I need to stop that. Just drinking, I need to stop that. But smoking, it obscured everything else, because it's so it's all encompassing. The reason I identify as an alcoholic, you guys, is because I was such a cold smoker. In 85, I came to the program for the first time, and I had 89 days of sobriety, and I went out with this girl. She was my older brother's ex-girl, just a friend of mine. And we went to this club, and we were sitting at the club, and she was dancing with a guy, and she had ordered a Long Island iced tea. Now, I had been in a treatment program for 28 days. I believed when they said, we don't drink and use anything. When I first went in there and got confronted with that, I'm like, y'all got me confused. I'm not here to not do anything. No, I just smoke. I'm not here for weed. I'm not here for alcohol. But when I was in there 28 days, I got indoctrinated. Now, looking back, at the time, I thought that I had conceded some stuff. I got indoctrinated. You know, yeah, we don't do nothing. We don't do nothing. Go to AA meetings, go to some CA. But I'm going to AA meetings, and I bought it. I thought I bought the package, you guys. Looking back, there were some signs I didn't really buy the package. They said, go get a home group in Alcoholics Anonymous. We had a little crew in the care unit. I said, why do I need to go to this little group of us, six or seven? We gonna be each other's support group. You know, we really tight up in here. We gonna do this damn thing. They saying that's for everybody else. And so, you know, I had a lot of those kinds of, I'm the kind of guy to tell myself something. Then I get one of my boys like Dylan and Brad, and I get them and they co-sign it. And then so it sounds like a good idea. Plus, oh shit, there's some other people endorsing it. Must be a good, you know, and I operate like that all the time. All the time. You know, in my 20s, me and my boys would say something, we'd agree, you know, in this circular way. Then we think, oh, we got a lot of other evidence that what I said is true. Yeah, the people I'm sitting around and running with. And then I'd operate on. So on day 89, you guys, I'm out at the speakeasy at this club, and this Long Island is with me while she's dancing. And turns out that although my mouth used to say I'm an alcoholic and an addict, turns out that my mind and my heart didn't really believe it. Or more accurately, don't know if it was that I didn't believe it in my mind. I hadn't conceded to it, hadn't been surrendered to that fact. I'm the kind of guy that I don't surrender. I learned that. I get surrendered. I'm not the surrendering kind, even if I say it with my mouth. So I learned that night, because I drank that Long Island. After all, it ain't a pipe. I ain't in a motel behind Long Islands. I ain't normally spend a whole paycheck behind Long Islands, I thought. So I drink this Long Island, you guys. And then I immediately ordered me one, drank it. I said, okay, let me save my money. Told old girl, take me home, because she was driving. I had 89 days. I get home. I go around the corner to the spot. I'm stuck for 11 months. And I got a full understanding of my condition. Whenever you hear me talk or share, You know, I usually share my name is Ralph. I'm an alcoholic because that's the area for me that I'm most likely to go into denial. I don't have any denial associated with smoking. I don't have any. But if there was going to be a Bermuda Triangle in my mind around whether or not we get, that would be it. So that's, you know, so I got a full understanding for some of the new guys that's on here that might be thinking like I was thinking when I first got sober. I'm like, now that I'm sober, now that I'm not spending all my money on it, now I could probably serve. I could probably stay sober and I could sell dope. Sound like a real good idea at the time too. You know, didn't realize monkey can't sell bananas, you know. And, you know, there are lots of people, probably some of you on here, who can confirm that one for us. Monkey does not sell bananas. A monkey may think that he's no longer a monkey because he dresses himself up in a suit. But a monkey in a suit is like a pig with lipstick. It don't matter. Monkey can't sell bananas. And so I was like, okay, you know. And so I had some milestones. 33 years old, go up in the treatment, you guys. And I'm when I get surrendered, there's a part in the book, and I forget which one of the stories it is, and he talked about when it seemed as if when I had when I decided to go through and I accepted all these proposals to do, I had the curious sensation that my alcohol problem was gone. When I went in the harbor like this time, you guys, surrender, 33 years old, you know, don't know what happened to me the night I went in. You know, this business of grace, and this business of the gift that we have. And, you know, and I really want to talk to you guys about the magnitude of the gift. You may not realize it. You may not really realize it. On October the 10th of 1986, from the time I was 18 years old till that day, I was 33 years old then, I couldn't put it down. I could put it down periodically because I'm not Kobe Bryant, I'm not Richard Pryor or Rick. I don't have unlimited funds. So I always could stop. I get stopped. I run out of money. I run out of money all the time. So you guys, you'll hear a lot of people say I couldn't put 30 days together. I could put days together all the time. I didn't want to, but I had to. I was putting days together. And when I did, it was torture. It was torture when I couldn't get. If I could have stayed loaded, you wouldn't have me here this morning. My problem was I got sober. Every time I got loaded, I got sober. I didn't stay loaded nonstop. And the periods of abstinence were torture. The periods of abstinence made me look at where this young man at 18 years old who had all these dreams, what the hell was happening? At 32 years old, sleeping on your mama's floor, crying at night, what happened to you? What happened to you? What happened to the guy that used to go to work in the morning? What happened to the guy that used to celebrate Christmas with the family? What happened to the guy who wanted to be somebody or do something with his life? What happened to the guy that wanted to make his mama proud and take care of her in her old age? What happened to that guy? And when I would be sober, you guys, when the money would run out, when I stagger out the motel, when I go home at the end of the evening and get those visits from the enemy, your conscience, it would be wearing me out. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. So I got to get loaded. And in those end days, some of you guys might relate to it. In those end days, John, Mendez, George, I'm drinking and using. I'm smoking to stop from thinking about what smoking had done to me. That's a cold place to be, man. and the only enjoyment I will get. That's, this is, why would you walk away from this life? Why would you walk away? I could get out of my bed. Wow, that's big. I have a bed that I was in on Saturday night that I can climb up out of. That's one blessing. I can get on this platform right here, and I can get as full from sitting with you gentlemen this morning. I can get as full as I'm going to need to be. I mean, and in those last days, fellas, the only enjoyment, I didn't have Christmas. I didn't have birthdays. I didn't have graduations. Think of the stuff you do now. Think of all the things you do. I didn't have Mother's Day. I didn't have Father's Day. You know what I had? I had just after copping. That's my high point. I would get a certain satisfaction. When Bill talked about when he called Abby, and that day when Abby was coming through, I mean, when Abby called Bill out the blue, before Abby called him, Bill said, I had a certain satisfaction thinking I had some gin stashed around the house. I had a certain satisfaction right after copping this 20. Not before I hit it, right after copping. I had a certain satisfaction. That's going to be it. That's the high point, gentlemen. Because when I'm halfway through, I'm getting sad already. Halfway through, my head is spinning already. Halfway through, I'm coming up with a plan on how we're going to stretch this out. Halfway through. And the high point of my day, the high point of my week, the high point of my existence in the year of 1986 up until October was that period right after COP. That's it. Didn't get no better than that. And I get to you guys coming off of that piece. So I go up in the harbor like where my brother was. And the night of October the 10th of 1986, I had some, this youngster would put something in my hands and let me serve it on the block. In the year of 86 in Los Angeles, California, you could have drive-through service. All of, just in South Central LA, you could cop anywhere on the block. And I was one of the people that was serving on the block. And I wasn't really serving. This youngster put something in my hands because he could, as far as he could see me. And these two young banger dudes saw me that night and asked me to serve them a 50, and I served them. And I asked him for the money, and he grabbed his crotch and was like, here's your 50, and walked away. And I thought, this is the weakest jack move ever. Didn't sock me, didn't pull a pistol, just walked away. And I did what I do in a situation like that. I know I got to go back to this youngster short. I know, and I'm embarrassed and humiliated and I'm mad. So I go to this spot to think about it. And I need a hit after that. And I smoke up the rest of the dude's dope. And at the end of that, shortly after I finished, I realized that wasn't a good idea. And I dodged a black truck five blocks back to my mom's house the morning of October 11th, 1986. And I knocked on her back door. And I thought I told her a lie. If you let me in the door, I'm going in the program. I think about that day of 80, and you know, in 1986, because it was not that different, fellas. This dude I was running from, I sucked his pistol before. He's my baby brother Rod's best friend. You know, side note, he's my personal trainer today. That guy that got me into the dope deal. He series of stuff. He's out the game. He out the life. We talk, but anyway. But I was surrendered. And 2 days after, I went to the Harbor Light Center. This gift, we call it the gift of desperation. We call it the gift of surrender. Think about the power of that. You think about it. I always talk about being surrendered. I had surrendered before. In fact, I had surrendered to the point in 1985, I had 89 days under my belt. I thought I had surrendered. But this business of being surrendered, and I don't know where I stand on what I'm getting ready to say, you guys. I don't know where I stand on it. You know, the thing about spiritual and the thing about this business of grace and the thing about this business of God is more than one thing can be true at the same time. That's all I can tell you. All I can tell you is it's some stuff I believe and it's some stuff I don't disbelieve. I just believe more than one thing. I hear speakers say sometimes, you know, when God is ready for you to get sober, then that's your time. And then to me, that's crazy. God, when is God not ready for me to be sober? You know what I'm saying? God does one thing. He just keep God. You know, when I was about 60 or 70 days sober, I was walking up to a meeting. We bouncing all over, you guys, so just strap in. I was so about, you know, 60 or 70 days sober, and I was going to a meeting. And I ran into this old timer and he said, "Ralph, what's going on with you?" I said, "Hey, John, I'm just doing God's work." He said, "What you think you can do for God that God can't do for himself?" Wow, that floored me, right? I thought I gave the right answer. Isn't that what I'm supposed to be doing? And he said, I said, "Oh, wait a minute, John, because my feet are well trained in the AA. I am the same foot training in AA. Or the same thing, and I got two fellowships, AA and CA, and the same foot training that's required in that. Some of that, guys, it ain't new to us. It ain't unique to us. Some of it is ancient. Some of it you got in the streets. Some of it you got in the house. I was raised, respect your elders. We call that respect in old time. We call it respect your elders. You don't know everything. You know, yeah, they may not know everything, but goddamn it, they know there's a benefit to you giving respect. It ain't, well, they don't deserve respect. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. There's a benefit, Ralph, to you giving respect. Not whether they earn it, not whether they merit it, not whether or not, oh, this earth, though, he ain't walking like he talk. Give respect. When you're 16 years old and it's an old dude in your name and he looked like, oh, shit, I make more money than it. Respect him. He's been around some corners you ain't even thought about yet. And there's a benefit, fellas, to that kind of effort. There's a benefit for me. I don't see it because youth is wasted on the young. It's wasted on the young in life. It's wasted on the young in recovery. So when you knew, be new. When you knew, be new. Don't get up under Scott. Don't get up under Terry and now start cracking the book and go up in a meeting and tell a guy who's been doing this when you was out there smoking, oh, you ain't saying that right. Oh, that ain't how you do a four step. Oh, that ain't. Don't be checking people because you've been, because now when I discover something, all of a sudden it's discovered and y'all been doing it wrong. They was up in here when you were smoking. Settle down, because guess what? You're going to be on the thing about it. I don't know that I'm going to be on the other side. We got a bunch of fathers on here right now. Remember that the time when I'm a young whippersnapper and I'm talking shit and I'm not respecting and I'm giving it to. And now I'm a guy that's raising kids. And now the light comes on. Oh, I get it now. I get it, because you don't want no 12-year-old all up in your face. Settle down. you know, but I don't. So the same thing, you know. So I'm anyway. I see John, and he's an old timer. And even though I thought I had given him the right answer, you know, doing God's work, John said, "What you think you can do for God?" I'm interested. When I got surrendered, you guys, I got surrendered right. I came into the program right. I came into the program open. I came into the program like I should have. When I was learning how to play, you know, I had sponsors in the life. When I first got put down in the game, I didn't know how to roll weed. I was embarrassed. I used a red roller, and I wouldn't let people see me, but I was open to show me how to roll a J. I wasn't sitting up giving feedback and talking shit. Show me how to roll a J. Show me how. And so when I came into recovery, I came into it with that. I'm an inquisitive guy. I'm empty. The problem with me is I think I have to already know before I now. I don't know why I think I have to. I can't let you know I don't know, because if I let you know I don't know, that means I'm saying you're better than me. I mean, I'm acknowledging that you are superior to me. That means I'm acknowledging that I'm inferior to you. All the things that I come in here with all the time, I don't know it. I'm built that way. You know, this bondage of self that we talk about, you guys, you know, fundamentally, when we talk about bondage of self, you know, we talk about when we get into our fourth step, because we're coming out of our third step, bondage of self, I want freedom from it. So then I start talking about being free of resentments and fears and, you know, my sex conduct. I'm gonna look at that. But I have some fundamental stuff that I've been bound up in all my life. You know, some of the reason why Tarek and I think I just gravitate there is because he has such a reminder of me, you know, bound up in, I'm too serious. I'm too self-conscious. I'm too all as a kid. This is prior to the stuff we talk about in the room, you guys. In a very fundamental way, I've been bound in self my whole life. As a kid, I'm always so conscious of how what I say lands on you. I see it. It didn't land right. I'm a veer this way. I'm gonna put it a different way. I'm not spontaneous. My girl, some of you guys might know my girl, Leslie, is spontaneous and she's open and I've been introverted all my life. I've been overly shy. That shyness, fellas, is fear. That shyness is too much. I'm so tightly wound in that I don't just operate without having to know outcomes and having to be able to control the environment, to control the narrative, to control the way that you see me. And nobody can do that. Right. But that's fundamental bondage itself. So when I started getting loaded, it freed this bound up guy. You know, it didn't make me somebody else. It allowed the real Ralph to come, because I don't know the real me. I don't know the real me. The real me has always been conditional on who I'm around and how that affects you to make it. So anyway, I told you guys we're bouncing all over today. I'm still in my little anecdote about John at the meeting, right? And we've told six other stories as a result of that. But so I walk up to him and I said, John, so talk to me. You know, what am I supposed to be doing? You know, I thought that, you know, I'm supposed to be doing God's work. He said, Ralph, God gave you something he didn't even reserve for himself. I'm interested. I have something God don't have. Are you serious with me right now? Talk to me. He said, God gave you the choice over whether or not you're going to return his love. God don't have no choice. God is love. God's job is to do for you. Your job is to do for his kids. You know, God don't do but one thing. He just keep God. He does not do but one thing, period. He don't, okay. Stop, Ralph. Disclaimer. When you hear me say what God does, how God operates, how God thinks, feel free to ignore it. Feel free to ignore it. I am the first person to tell you I'm clueless. But for the sake of us having a conversation, I'm going to share with you guys my perception of how I think based on the way my world is out, what I think. So we can have a conversation. Otherwise, we can't even have a conversation. We need a starting point. So my idea is this God that I see, because there are things that would seem to contradict that. If God is just grace, if God is only love, how did Angie, your niece, die when she was 4 years old? What about that? And then I could go into a whole nother thing about that. But God is love. God is, that's all God does. You know, the manifestation of Ralph is self. The manifestation of self, we read it on resentments, fears, you know. So the manifestation of God, Ralph, you know, is self. The manifestation of God is grace. Manifestation of God, grace. That's what God does. You know, and so this business of grace, they visited me October the 11th, 1986, in a powerful way. In a powerful way. In a way that is so powerful that on that day, the obsession to get loaded was lifted from me. I can't speak for nobody else. And it has not revisited me. I don't have the story of I thought of getting loaded. And I did not. I don't have that story. I don't deny it when I hear people saying. I don't deny about Dr. Bob's and his story talked about he thought about drinking for years after he got sober. You know, I know there are members. Some of you guys might. My story, when the taste got taken out of my mouth, it got taken out of my mouth. New friends. Well, what you saying, Ralph? You never thought of getting loaded? No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that, but I never had money loaded. That's how obsession looks on this guy. Obsession on Ralph is money loaded. No period of premeditation, no nothing. I'm automatic pilot. I'm money loaded, period. Something happened. And when I look back on it, the power of that experience, I don't know whether to call it an experience because it wasn't an incident. It's been with me 36 plus years. But the power, the gift, sometimes we don't know it's a gift. Sometimes when it happens to you, it feels like it's a birthright. Sometimes when it happens to you, it feels like I just had this coming. Sometimes when it happens to you, you feel like you take credit for it. No, I surrender. No, my ass was whooped well enough. I felt the lash of it. I was scared enough and I was scared straight. I started taking these actions. I got in the book. I started, but something happened that was so powerful to this guy that when he wasn't sitting with you guys, when he wasn't in a meeting, when he wasn't surrounded, when it was 11:30 at night, the taste didn't come in his mouth. It didn't come knocking. Pre-sponsor, pre-12 steps. How do you explain giving from day 4 to day 5? This business of grace is real, gentlemen. Powerful. That gift, and it's not everybody's. I didn't realize that. It challenges me in my belief about this power. Well, what do you mean, Ralph? If God is only giving out grace, if that's all he does, well, why is it that this guy, I was at a meeting Friday with a guy that asked me to sponsor him many years ago. He was there. He's going to make the circuit of everybody in the meeting. Almost every guy has had a shot at him. And he took a chip for 90 days. And he's been going back to the 80s coming around. And it looks like, and people, if you guys who've been around, everybody has a home group where there's the guy that just bounces. And he looks like he's full of shit. He looks like he's not serious. He looks like he's playing with this thing. He comes around. He knows the book. He knows enough about it to be slightly dangerous, Ralph's opinion. he says funny stuff from the podium. Everybody laughs. He's personable, and he comes around, and he seems to be, and I call him an attender mockingly and scoffingly, and I call and I say, "Well, meeting," and I do what I do with my judgment. And maybe, just maybe, the difference between that guy and me is he was not gifted with this surrender that I take credit for. But when I get honest with you guys, on day six, I didn't keep myself surrendered. I would like to tell you my ass was whooped enough that, okay, it had been whooped before. What happened that when nightfall came, the call came, and I had to go answer the call on all those other times? But something remarkable happened. And this grace came in and expelled obsession. And I haven't had one. I've had some milestones. 6 months sober, my mom let me back in her house. And I was in the house, and a girl called, landline. This is 1987. And this girl named Julie called. And when I was in the life, me and my brothers, we were all smoking together. And we would have other people that we would claim as our own, right? They were smokers who didn't live in the neighborhood, and they didn't know the dope man like we knew him. So they would call, and we would be middlemen, right? Some of y'all know. And I take mine off the top and this girl Julie called. This was Reggie's girl, my brother Reggie. And Reggie was Reggie was in treatment at that time. So Julie calls. I'm at mom's house and I answer the phone. And Julie says, "Is Don working?" Don is the dope man across the street. I say, "No, I don't look to see. I don't look out my window. I don't do anything. I'm 6 months sober, fellas." I say, "No." And I hung up the phone. And when I hung up the phone, I panicked because it was no Star 69 in 1987. Wasn't a cell phone, no caller ID to show Julie's phone number. And I said, "Oh, shit, what did you do? Julie always spends $500. She copping, Julius Bigma, what did you do?" Pavlovian, you guys. It was an automatic reflex. I didn't know how deep the life was in me. I had to not only detox from the drugs and alcohol, I had to detox from the lifestyle. And that took a minute. I didn't realize it, right? That's why sex is particularly troublesome a lot of times, fellas, because I'm so used to connecting sex with getting loaded. That early in recovery is a slippery slope, fellas. Be mindful. Anyway, I didn't realize how deep the life was in me. I panicked. "Oh, shit, what did you do? You know Julia's money. I wonder if it's a way I could get her phone number back." And that was about 20 to 30 seconds. Trip, calling myself stupid. What was that? And I exhaled at about the 30-second mark. And I said, "Wow, you must really want to be sober." I had milestones for myself, you guys, not to show it to a spouse or my mom. I had milestones for myself. That's one of my first markers in early recovery that I had. One of my first markers. Howard P., the late, great Howard P., used to say, "Wherever you see God, wherever you see God, mark that spot and go visit it frequently." One of my first God shots, you know, that phone call when I didn't even let myself get engaged in the process. Sometimes, fellas, it's easier to stay out of some shit than to get out of some shit. Speaking about sex being a slippery slope, it's easier to stay out of some shit than to get out of some shit. And I'm glad I didn't engage the process. I didn't go to the window. I didn't go to the door. I didn't look up the block. I did not engage the process. One of the first times. 7 years sober is the only time I came close to drinking. Wait a minute. Thought you said the obsession was lifted from you. I never thought that I would want to drink without the obsession. That's why when we do a fourth step, we talk about causes and conditions, you guys. I thought the only way I would ever want to drink was if I got thirsty. I thought the only way I would ever want to get loaded was with the obsession. I was working at a job, 7 years sober, and we were on a trial out of town. So we were staying in a hotel. I was working in a law firm, and I had a big law firm. We were at a big law firm, and we had a big client, the Walt Disney Company. And we won this trial the first day of trial. The other side made a motion they shouldn't have made. And so we were in this hotel room, seven people in a hotel. The general counsel of Disney, he had a bottle of Dom Perignon. Another corporate guy from Disney, you know, a Disney paralegal, two partners from my firm, an associate from my firm, and me, paralegal, low man on the totem pole. I'm the lowest man in the room. And Ed Nowak is pouring a bottle of Dom Perignon, seven people in a circle. I don't want to drink. I don't want to drink. Here's why, fellas, nothing's wasted in God's economy. Stop bashing. Stop bashing stuff you don't know nothing about. I was one of those guys. I came in, it got fashionable, you know, in about 86 or 87. You know, what is this? I don't drink no matter what. I do drink no matter what, you know, and was bashing that real hard. You know, I do drink no matter what. What are these people saying that I don't drink no matter what? That's bullshit. That ain't recovered. Boo, 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 boo. So Ed Nowak is pouring. I'm in the circle. It's getting ready to come to me. And I'm thinking, my mind's going a million miles a minute. I don't want to embarrass myself. I don't want to embarrass my firm. I don't want to be humiliated. I don't want to look bad. I don't want them to look down on me. I don't want to look stupid. I don't know, what are they going to think? All they want me to do is, and here's the thing. In chapter 3, we talk about parallel with our sound reasoning was the insanely trivial idea. Parallel with this crazy thinking that was going in my head was this loud voice. I don't drink no matter what. I don't drink no matter what. I don't drink no matter what. I mean, loud, louder than the chatter. I don't drink no matter what. Fellas, I don't know what gave me enough to step out of the circle, excuse me. And I went, I would have thought if you would hook me up and quiz me prior to this, I would have thought, typical Ralph, I'm going to let him pour and pretend to drink. I'm going to let, I don't know what gave me enough, fellas. And I left the circle, went to the sink in the hotel room, in the bathroom, got water in mine and came back to the circle. And it looked like everybody was looking at me like, what's wrong with you, right? And so for 30 seconds, I was uncomfortable. For the last about 29 years now, I've been extremely comfortable with that decision, you know? And so don't let comfort be your measuring stick. Another milestone, another one, you know? And so while I don't drink no matter what, it's not my program of recovery. As a result of having a program of recovery, I don't drink no matter what. So I don't diminish. I'm telling you, that was huge. It saved the day. See, I did not know we were going over like this. You know, you guys, I when I get in front of you, I don't know where we're going, you know, and the last piece, I want to wish everybody in here happy Father's Day. I was 33 when I got to you. My daughter was 2.5 years old. It had been a long, long time. Not long, because she was only 2.5 years old. But it felt like I didn't know if I'd be welcome again. We got some new guys on here. I don't know if you new guys are dads. But if you are, and you see the other guys on here, and they're saying happy Father's Day, and it's cutting you like a knife, because it's not happy, and it don't feel like Father's Day for you, because you may not get to. Chris is holding his baby up right now, And that is such a wonderful feeling. There are so many of us who identify with this feeling. But there's a couple of guys on here that that feeling is cutting them. It's cutting them. You know, there are a couple of guys on here that this day is reminding them, you know, man, my life is in the toilet. You know, my life, I ain't gonna never be a dad again. She keeping my kids away from me. You know, I don't even know where they are. It's a couple of guys on here like that. And for the guys that's on here like that, I want to encourage you. I was just that way when I got to you guys, 33 years old. Didn't know where my little girl was enrolled in school. Didn't know where my family was living. And one of the things that I did, that's the biggest thing we do, fellas. One of the reasons we talk about fellowship is I needed the witness testimony. I needed to know why it was I'm going to take this walk with you guys. Because I couldn't see holding my baby like Chris is holding it. I couldn't see it yet. I couldn't see standing up and being accountable. I couldn't see looking at myself full face in the mirror. I couldn't see having a key to anybody's. I couldn't see it. So what we do, fellas, is we light the path for somebody else. We light the way. I'm not going to say AACA, whatever it is. I'm not going to say, you know, I need A. It don't need me. We need you. We need you. We need you. Because the new man, he ain't going to recognize God. If God was to see him on the street right now, he swear that's a PCP over, you know, flashback and go run. He needs to see you. He's going to see this power through you. That's the book he's going to read. That's the God he's going to see. That's the hope he's going to have. That's what's going to, why else would I do this? Why else would I get on my knees and say, do something with me? Because there's some guys on here that make me want it. And they're more important than making me want it. They make it seem like it's available to me. No. So you guys that's on here, happy Father's Day. I am so grateful that you allow me to crash the party. I'm grateful, you know, that you allow me to be in your company. I'm still, you know, I still get inspired, you know. And so I done took up way too much time to. I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, where'd that time go? You know, so I know a lot of people had to go. Happy Father's Day, fellas. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.
Ralph, thank you so much. We talk frequently and often, and I heard bits of your experience I've never heard before. And you took me down to the dark end of the street once again and brought it back full circle. And the relationship between the gift and the possible changes that sometimes we take for granted and we don't remember. And today I was able to remember so many of these blessings that I've been given, along with all the guys I've known on this call for so many years, that sometimes our life is moving so fast to remember. The gift is such an extraordinary grace in itself. And one thing that hit me so hard when you said it was like, you know, I was so deep in the life before, but now after moving my feet for so long, I'm so deep in the life that has God at the center and this way of life that, yes, that we don't drink no matter what. It's just who I am, right? It's not a conscious decision. It's just who I am now. And that's as a result of the gift. So thank you, Ralph. I love you. Thank you so much for sharing your Sunday with us. Real quick, Brandon Putzer, 12 years. I'm embarrassed because this has been my road dog, my running mate. I mean, this is one of my dearest friends. He picked up 12 years this week, and I completely just forgot at the beginning. So, Brandon, will you say a few words, please, sir?
Brandon just hopped off.
All right, I didn't get to him. We'll do it next week. Let's have a few moments of silence, and then we're going to get out of here. Of course, those of you that stay on the call typically afterwards, I'll still be on here for a little while, so feel free to stay on. Thank you again, Ralph. Thank you.
I got to run and get